Why was May scared?
I can't help it. There's something about this island. She's psychic.
In that case, let me get out my Ouija board.
I'll loosen up, Bess. Some people get vibes.
Vibrations. Evil. Evil.
What kind of feelings do you get, May? Evil. I get feelings of evil from this island.
That's just me wanting to bore you.
Come on, May. We're here to have fun now. Snap out of it.
Evil. Feelings of evil.
Can't you feel it? I'm scared, Penny. Let's go back.
But it was your idea to come to the island.
Hey, there's a bedroom up there. What's with you?
May's uptight about the place. She wants to split.
But it's terrific here. Just like the kid said it was. We have sounds, food, and some great grass. This place is really far out.
It scares the hell out of me.
And the two dead boys?
Also American, also on a vacation tour. Four of them went to a jazz festival in the West Country. When the festival was ended, they hired a boat and set off for Snape Island.
What has probably happened is that her brain has become overloaded by the horror of what it has done or seen. So its only recourse was to blow the fuse, so to speak.
Snape Island never brought anything but unhappiness, tragedy for anyone.
If the girl didn't murder those kids, who did?
Somebody else, obviously.
But who? There was nobody else on the island, was there?
Huh?
Was there?
What?
This is Hans Manship from House of Death, and you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, episode 124. And this time we're going to be off to the Tower of Evil. I think this is going to be a fun one. So, Eric, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling far out and groovy, man.
Okay. And Nathan, are you scared?
I'm terrified. Terrified of all the nudity.
Okay. But are you looking forward to the grass? I mean, on the island, where it's growing on the island.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Totally the legal grass that's growing on that.
Okay. And Joseph, are you worried about losing your head?
Partially today because I'm so exhausted.
Are you? What have you been up to then? You've just been working lots.
Yeah, and just haven't slept much lately. So, but I'll soldier on.
Okay. Well, you're the trooper you are. Are you up late last night watching Tower of Evil?
Yes, I was. I didn't get around to it until like almost midnight last night because I was so busy yesterday.
Okay. Well, there you say. That's dedication for you. And thank you for that. But we'll be coming on to Tower of Evil, a.k.a. Horror of Snape Island, the kind of the British proto slasher from 1972, which very possibly influenced one of the classic early 1980s slasher movies, has some striking similarities. So we'll be talking about that. And also it's a very effective little slasher movie, or perhaps, as Nathan oft says, it's two slasher movies for one. So we'll be coming on to that a little bit later. But before we do, in time-honoured tradition, let's talk about what we've been watching recently. So, Nathan, have you seen anything of note?
Unfortunately, I haven't. Because, you know, it's only been a week since we recorded our last show, because we're recording several in advance. So, unfortunately, I haven't seen anything new that I could think of. Although, I did get some interesting news, and that is that Wes saw the preview. I'm sure you guys seen the previews for that new movie, Don't Breathe. Have you seen previews for it?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. Well, it looks like it sort of reminds me of the plot line of People Under the Stairs, but a much more serious version, because it's about these three people that break into this house basically to rob this old blind man. But apparently this old blind man turns out to be insane or something, just from what I'm looking at the trailer. And it looks like he, like, locks them in the house, shuts off all the lights, so they're basically on an even playing field, and then hunts down these people that broke into his house. But it looks really suspenseful. There's a lot of, like cat and mouse and, hiding and trying to sneak around this guy where, he won't catch you. So it looks like it could be really tense. And I was very shocked that Wes was interested in watching that, because usually if it looks like a movie will have jump scares, he stays far, far away from it. So I'm excited.
Okay. Okay. Well, that sounds interesting. Talking of upcoming horror movies, there's another movie that's getting quite a lot of buzz at the moment. Isn't it The Woods? Have you seen the trailer for that?
Not
In the Woods. No, it's just called The Woods.
Okay.
And the trailer looks quite interesting, but it's one of these things. It's getting like a lot of buzz for it. People are saying one of the scariest movies ever made, chilling and intense, a nightmare of classic proportions, are some of the reviews that are appearing. So by Adam Wingard as well, who was the director of what was he directed? He directed
Your Next.
And The Guest.
And The Guest, yeah.
Yeah, so that could be... that. I'm looking forward to that. That sounds like it could be
looks
interesting.
Looks like it's going to be released in September. Just from what I'm looking at on IMDb, I looked it up. It says a group of college students on a camping trip discovered they're not alone.
Well, that sounds right up our street.
That's pretty basic, and right up our streets, yeah.
But I imagine, I don't know, because Your Next was a pretty good twist on the slasher movie, wasn't it? So, the home invasion slasher movie. So maybe this will be a twist on the sort of In the Woods slasher movie of the 1980s. So,
are any of you going to see the third Purge movie? Because I will admit, I know that the Purge movies get a lot of hate, especially the first one, but I love them. I think the first and second one are both really good. I actually prefer the second, so I'm hoping the third is an improvement even over the second one.
Yeah, I thought the first Purge was like a pretty decent film, but I really loved Purge 2 Anarchy. I like the idea of setting this new one during an election year, so I am interested in seeing that. One movie I really want to see is The Neon Demon. Have you seen the trailer for that?
I haven't seen the trailer, but I know it's been quite controversial, isn't it? It got lots of walkouts at Cannes, which is always a indication of a film that's going to be controversial.
Yeah. The trailer looked really well done. It feels like the what's that movie with Natalie Portman, Black Swan.
Black Swan, yeah.
Yeah, it has that kind of feeling to it. Like it's almost pretentious in a way, but at the same time, it looks kind of trashy and delirious. So I'm kind of interested in seeing it.
Cool. Okay. Well, no, that one sounds that sounds good. So, Nathan, if you've not seen anything else, I don't want to cut you off before you finished, obviously.
Yes, obviously not.
No, I mean, mainly it's just, I know, because I might get mad.
Is this the new Susie versus Toya?
Well, it could be.
Yeah.
So it only took us 124 episodes to get a new shtick.
I listened back to that episode, and I think I was very polite to you, Justin.
Oh, well, I don't think you were, Nathan. Sorry, Eric. See, I'm so kind of used to...
You called him Eric.
Yeah, I'm so used. A reflex action.
It was a reflex action, yes.
My recollection was I said, excuse me, kind sir, but I have a little bit more I'd like to say. That's what I recollect happened.
Well, that you clearly didn't listen to
that. Shut up, you can't have him finished.
Like, that's the two extremes.
Well, all we have to do is listen back. If only I had the clip to play back, but maybe I'll get it. So at some point. Joseph, what about you? What have you been watching?
Well, the only thing I've watched, and it's not horror related, unfortunately, is The Joy of Painting by Bob Ross. It's on Netflix. Yay.
Okay.
I saw that, yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, well, that's the Afro, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been a very, very busy week, and it's only been like a week since we recorded, so nothing for me this week, I'm afraid.
No, that's fine. So, we're slightly out of sync, aren't we? But Eric, how about you?
Okay, well, I've watched one, which is The Night Evelyn Came Out of the Grave, which is part of the Killer Dames box set that Arrow have just released. The other film being The Red Queen Kills Seven Times. I watched that one couple of years back, but The Night Evelyn Came from Out of the Grave, I hadn't seen in quite a long time. I couldn't really remember that much about it. It's the one that gets the less kind reviews on all the review sites at the moment, but I actually thought it was pretty decent. It's a typically odd and slow giallo that appears to have these over-the-top supernatural elements to it, and then it pulls the rug from under you in the conclusion that sort of says, oh, it was really all XYZ and a big plot to do, you know, this, that, and the other to a person. But it stars Anthony Steffen as sort of this very wealthy man who's having a nervous breakdown as he tries to deal with the death of his wife, Evelyn, of the title. So he goes out on the prowl and brings his women back to his lush castle and starts whipping and torturing and killing them. So, you know, it's not the best giallo by any means, but the one it reminded me of most probably would be Spasmo, which is another one that has this just bizarre plot that seems to meander and seems to suggest that everything that's happening is supernatural, and then sort of has a Scooby-Doo type ending to sort of explain all the weird goings on away as being sort of very straightforward. I thought it was pretty decent. There's some great extras on there. Audio commentary by Troy Howarth, and lots and lots of Erica Blanc, even though she's only in the film for about 5 minutes. I think she's sort of the one surviving cast member they could find. So she's sort of all over the extras. But very decent. And also looking forward to watching Red Queen Kill 7 times, which I'll do later. I also picked up a Blu-ray of Dead Snow 2, which you were recommending to me last week, Justin. Mm. So looking forward to watching that over the... It's our bank holiday this weekend over here, so
Okay. Time. Cool. Yeah. Okay, well, I'd be looking forward to my box set with the Killer Dames, the double bill. It should be on its way soon, hopefully. So I'm looking forward.
The old No Shame release was the same two films, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
Yeah.
I did actually have that. I had that one with the figurine, which I sold on eBay to ahead of getting this one. So I just thought I'd do an upgrade. So I'm trying to clear house a little bit because I've got like multiple releases of things. So I'm selling bits and pieces on eBay just to, you know, get money to buy more crap, basically. But yeah, there you go. So,
that's the way to do it.
That's the way to do it. So I don't know if you'll be able to hear this, but I've kind of if this will play. But I think I found that clip of Nathan.
Obviously, you're an Ivan. What are you, fucking lazy?
Yep. And that was
You are not going to call me that crazy rhubarb lady.
Well, that was. So that was
how you heard. Mess with another man's rhubarb.
Yeah. So you heard it here first. So that's that was what Nathan said to me last time. It's outrageous. So So
yeah, I think but it's not as outrageous as Eric calling you a whore.
I don't think I was calling him a whore. I think I was just doing an imitation of Werewolf Woman.
If Eric's the Inga of the podcast, does that mean Nathan's the rhubarb?
Nathan could be rhubarb lady now. That's
I always thought of myself as a lesser Inga, like Sally from Demons 2.
Sally, there's nothing lesser about Sally. She's even worse than Inga, I think.
Really? You think so? Sally's dress got on her nerves. So yeah,
particularly the sleeves.
Yeah, the sleeves were really bad for her. I like the sleeves personally.
It was Jacob was the real problem. That was a straw that broke the camel's back.
See, I think that's the problem with her is, you know, everything she was upset about was just because of this boyfriend or ex-boyfriend of hers. Whereas with Inga, I think she was just a little crazy.
That's true. Yeah.
I think I'd be the Mr. Chow of the podcast. I didn't get much sleep. Now I'm on ground.
Bad chop suey. Yeah. I got that. Yes. At least it wasn't a Simpsons reference, which I'll never get. So,
and then Justin can be the Linda Day George from Pieces.
Yeah.
Of the podcast.
No, I think
better than the Beatles references we're always getting thrown at us.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? I think. Well, the Beatles are horror podcasting.
Yeah.
Well, we've always debated about who's Ringo, Eric. But
hey, you're the Linda McCartney. If we were Wings, you'd be the Linda McCartney, Justin.
Yeah,
standing in the back, just occasionally bashing a tambourine,
making tasty veggie sausages.
Who's the Yoko?
Who is Eric?
Eric's the Yoko.
Yeah, well,
Yoko.
Well, I think Yoko. Well, I think because Yoko and Toya have a certain similarity when it comes to making incredibly difficult to listen to music.
You shut up. She was on Top of the Pops again last night.
Oh, was she? What?
Which? Yeah. Good Morning Universe this time. Another top 20 single for her in 1981.
Was it a rerun? Does that show still come on?
No. It's they're showing them from 35 years ago. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, she's not having hits now. I think that's...
shut up, you.
The kindest well, thing.
And Susie is she?
Well, she had a quite... She was in the Hannibal soundtrack, wasn't she? Which she did very well, that single from that.
Really?
She gets those penny royalties, at least.
Yeah.
But, does Stuart like Susie as much as you, Justin, or does he just like her because you like her?
He tolerates her. He used to like her. He doesn't like her as much now because I keep playing her. But I usually play when he falls asleep. I put the records on, and he wakes up and he's quite annoyed. I'm playing Susie.
Well, yeah, what do you expect?
Well, it could be worse. It could be Toya. Anyway, hey. Enough of that.
I love the smell.
I've met Stuart, and he told me he loves Toya.
No, well, that's not true.
I love the smell of divorce in the morning.
Yeah.
Well, funnily enough, there is a song. I found a very apt song to play out with at the end of the podcast, which you'll have to wait to find out what it is. And our clue is it's not Toya. Anyway.
Oh, I wonder if it'll be Susie.
Well, it might be.
It's always fucking Susie.
Well, it might be. It's a song called The Lighthouse. So there you go.
By Susie the Banshees.
No.
Did you just say... No. Okay, I think I misheard you.
What do you think I said?
What do you think I said?
I thought you just said Justin's always effing Susie, the F word.
No, I just said it's always fucking Susie.
Oh, it's always.
I didn't say Justin's always.
Oh my God.
Is somebody falling apart?
I had to. I dropped a headphone out of my ear, so I had to pick it up.
That sounded like a Toya B-side. Anyway, let's get on to what I've been watching. It's all about me. So. The only thing I've seen was, I don't know, have any of you seen Honeymoon? The kind of relatively recent. You have?
Yes.
Yeah.
Has it got the girl from Game of Thrones in it?
It has. And it's got Harry Treadaway from Penny Dreadful, who plays Dr. Frankenstein in Penny Dreadful. And we probably talked about it before on the podcast, but it's just kind of very briefly. It's about a couple on their honeymoon, as the title would suggest. And they go back to her kind of family holiday home, I kind of guess, by a lake. Sort of very tranquil, very kind of bucolic, kind of Americana, sort of, you know, by the lake and everything's very, very beautiful, and they're very happy and they're bonking all the time and stuff. And then she disappears one night and he finds her and she's got strange bite marks on her, and then her personality changes, and that's kind of all I'd say about it. But yeah, I thought it was really good. It was really well acted. I didn't see where it was going, and when it went to where it was going, it kind of made sense. But very beautifully shot, you know, it was, so it's a good film. What about you guys? Have you seen it?
Yes.
Oh, no, of course you've seen it. So what if you haven't seen it recently? Or
I liked it a lot. I wasn't sold completely on the why of this was happening, but, you know, the build-up was very effective and, you know, very well done.
I really love the actress, Rose Leslie, that's her name. I really like her because I really loved her on Game of Thrones. So, you know, I really liked her a lot already, and I thought the story was intriguing. So I enjoyed it.
Cool. Eric, did you say you had seen it all?
No, I haven't, no. But I'm curious, why is the word, what's the derivation of the word honeymoon? Honeymoon. Like Nutella planet, marmalade star.
Chocolate starfish.
Chocolate starfish, yeah.
Well, this is scintillating.
No, just honeymoon is just a weird word. It's always occurred to me it would be in a weird mood. Weird word.
Well, it must be, I don't know, ancient thing, sort of fertility rites or something, wasn't it? Is it traditionally women are supposed to come into be more fertile, or their fertility's heightened in moons?
What's the honey bit?
Don't know.
They're honeys, you know. How you say, hi, honey, how are you?
Well, if anyone wants to write in and let us know.
Maybe the bride has to moon the husband. This was an old tradition in days of yore.
I think that a night after the wedding, or that trip they go on their wedding, it should be expected that the bride's going to get honey on her moon. So
yeah,
that's kind of where it came from.
Okay.
Keep awesome.
I always leave the honey on their face.
Oh, dear. Joseph, you just lowered the tone of the podcast.
You have made this X-rated when it was G.
Yeah.
You've taken it from, like, Finding Nemo.
We now have
MKA
issues coming out of our ears because of you.
HR's not going to be happy about this, are they?
No. So I might have to do some. I might have to bleep some bits out, although I probably won't. But
don't censor me.
So Eric, do you kind of? I've got this vision in my head now of Eric mooning your dates. Is that what you do?
Only after I marry them, because that's the tradition.
Of course. How many husbands do you have?
16, 17, 18, 19.
19, wow. One in every port. Yeah.
Eric, have you ever been married?
No.
No. Okay.
I find it crazy that you guys overseas call it mooning as well. Because usually, I don't know, there's kind of like a different word. You know, like vacation over here is holiday over there. So I just thought mooning would mean something else over there.
I still think it probably something. Is it still is an American word, but just we do know what it means.
It's one of those times.
Trail and trolley wompton.
It's one of those times where our two great cultures meet together.
Yes, the word mooning.
The mooning, yeah.
The mooning did it, yes.
And seagulling as well, I think, is a universal word.
Well, it is now.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
After that commentary, although I don't remember which commentary it was.
It was
Nail Gun Massacre.
Nail Gun Massacre, yeah.
Mm. Well, it's an appropriate movie to do that on.
Yeah, yeah.
No, to hear about it on, not to do it on.
I was seagulling while we were recording. Was nobody else?
But you? Oh.
Well, why was it so quiet? Did you mute your phone?
I'm skilled. Ear? It's not my first time.
There it is.
First time at the rodeo.
He's being a real seagull.
Yeah, but that wasn't quite. Well, maybe people do make. Maybe they do make that noise when they see.
There's no seagulls on Snape Island.
No. Talking of which, it's probably time that we get in the boat and put on our velvet pantaloons.
And take it in the stern.
In front of a blue screen.
In front of
Eric,
a blue screen,
get that?
Yeah.
What?
Take it in the stern.
Ooh.
Don't get him excited.
It's a Friends reference, Eric.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Is it from when Rachel was teaching Joey how to sail?
No, it's the one where Chandler dated Joey's girlfriend, or he liked Joey's girlfriend. Yeah.
Oh, right. Oh, yes. And they have the canoe.
It's a boat joke. It's a boat sexual joke. So.
Okay. Well, maybe there'll be lots of boat jokes, but coming up. But here is the trailer for 1972's Tower of Evil.
Anybody home?
I don't like it here, Penny. It gives me the creeps.
It's the kind of place that would give anybody the creeps.
I'm scared, Penny. Let's go back.
Who in their right mind would even go to this island? Would you go there?
Evil. I get feelings of evil from this island.
Would you dare spend the night in this monument to the macabre, in the Tower of Evil?
Stop playing around, man.
Her brain has become overloaded by the horror of what it has done or seen.
Snape Island never brought anything but unhappiness, tragedy, for anyone.
If the girl didn't murder those kids, who did?
Somebody else, obviously.
But who? There was nobody else on the island, was there?
Huh?
Was there?
What? What's the matter?
Can't you hear it? Listen.
That's not the wind, is it?
There's only one way into Snape Island. There's only one place to go on Snape Island. But there are infinite ways to reach the next world in the Tower of Evil.
This means we're completely cut off from the mainland. The boat's gone, now the radio's gone.
One way in and no way out. It looks as if we shall all have to spend the night in the Tower of Evil.
From acclaimed horror producer Richard Gordon in Seminoid Devil Doll Horror Hospital comes the brutal and mysterious story of the Tower of Evil. Set in deserted lighthouse on fog-shrouded Snape Island, the terror begins when a nude, crazed woman slaughters a sailor who visits the island. When she is taken back to civilization, she is found to possess an ancient relic, and so the authorities mount an expedition to solve a mysterious series of psychosexual murders. 1972's Tower of Evil is a British proto-slasher, which, as aforementioned, and as Nathan's often said, is two slasher movies in one. In so much that what we have is two casts. It starts with the two sailors visiting the island, and then the nude lady kills one of them and is bashed over the head by the other sailor, who takes her back to the mainland, where she's put under kind of what looks like kind of disco therapy, which is kind of flashing disco lights. And she recounts in flashback how her friends travel to Snape Island for basically lots of sex and grass and various things like that. And before they're bumped off one by one by an unseen killer. And as the synopsis from the back of the Tower of Evil Blu-ray, which I've got in my hands here, which is from Nucleus Films in the UK, which is very, very, very good, actually. It's well worth getting if you're interested in watching the movie. When she gets back, she'd killed a sailor with this kind of relic, which turns out to be, I think, a 3,000-year-old Phoenician sword, which interests a group of young archaeologists to go back to the island to find out what had happened and also to look for more treasure. And of course, one by one, they also fall victim to the mysterious killer on the in and around the lighthouse on Snape Island. So you have two slasher movies for one, which and I really enjoy it. It's one of my favourite proto slashers. It does a lot of things that you will see later on in the 1980s, early 1980s slasher movies. So you have lots of nudity, and in, curiously, certainly for a British film, or actually any films around this time, is that there's a lot of male nudity. In fact, probably as much male nudity as there is female nudity in this, which, as I say, is quite surprising. But it really has that whole whole kind of shtick down that you saw in films like Friday the 13th of the have sex and die, smoking grass, doing illicit things, and not really doing the things you're meant to be doing. Like, for instance, the archaeologists who go to the island seem to have much more interest in smoking joints and having sex than they do actually looking for ancient Phoenician artifacts. So, and also, as I mentioned before, I mean, we'll talk a little bit about it after everyone else had their go, but it seems very likely that this film inspired one of the best regarded early 80s slasher movies for a number of reasons, but that will include some spoilers, so we'll come on to that a little bit later. But before we do that, Joseph, you were up to the early hours watching this. Was this your first time on Snape Island?
Actually, I'd seen this quite a while ago. It's probably about 20 or 25 years ago, so I didn't remember anything. And, you guys know this, but I didn't even know we were recording today. I thought, all of us were kind of out of town, so I was like, uh-oh, I got to watch it. And I literally waited till like midnight last night to watch it. That's why I'm so tired. But it was as good as I remember. It's actually a lot better than I remember, because it seems like I liked it before, but I was just kind of like, it was okay. But I had a lot of fun with it. My only problem with the film is, once the archaeologists, uncover what happened to the girl and that there's treasure on the island, they kind of forget about that girl. Maybe I was just kind of tired and it seemed like they forgot about her. But, more towards the last third of the film, she just kind of, disappears, I guess. Her story's over. I was kind of interested to, maybe she... I kind of wanted her to go back to the island for some reason, just to kind of confront the murderer or ers on the island. Spoiler alert. But I really did love this film. I think, for a film shot in Surrey in like 1971, it's pretty graphic. I mean, it's lots of nudity, and I love the set designs. I think it was filmed on a sound stage, so they did a really good job of, giving it this kind of island, rocky island with a big tower atmosphere. Lots of nooks and crannies to explore. The tower is just kind of, foreboding, and yet at the same time, very claustrophobic. Very, very good cinematography, likable characters. The killer, I didn't remember, who the murderer was, and this is another spoiler. The two killers, the father and son, which I know you're referencing, it has to be Hell Knight, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Anyway, yeah, that actually threw me for a loop because I mean they mentioned the Michael a couple of times and then at one point I was like, I bet it's Michael and they think it's the dad, and it, when it turned out to be both of them, I was like, oh, I didn't see that coming, and I'd completely forgotten that that was the big reveal. So I thought that was really well done. Although I did kind of giggle at the makeup effects on Michael at the end. He looked rather phony, but I guess you can forgive it for the time period. You know, other than those little, you know, minor hiccups, you know, I think it's a very, very effective film, very atmospheric, you know, like you and Nathan say, two slasher movies in one, although I kind of wish they would have had a little bit more of a collusion rather than she's told these archaeologists about this place and then she just kind of disappears. They kind of want to like intermingled a little bit more, I would have been, you know, it'd probably been a lot more exciting that way. But still, you know, that's just a minor, you know, gaffe. This is a very effective film. Definitely one of the best proto slashers I've ever seen. I mean, I have a lot more to say, but, you know, I'll just end it right now with a thumbs way, way up. So, yeah, I loved it.
Excellent. Thank you, Joseph. Nathan, how about you?
I love Snape Island, the movie and the island, because I think that lighthouse is really cool. And of course, you know, like you said, and I've said 100 times, I love the idea of, you know, two little slasher movies in one. I think that's so much fun, watching two different groups of people, you know, face the same killer, or spoiler, killers. I think the movie has a really good atmosphere on the island. I love that whole foggy atmosphere. And I did love what Justin was saying, because as I was watching it this past week, actually last night, the scene where the main teenage girl, I think her name's Penny, the scene where she's getting hypnotized with those, what Justin calls disco lights, as I was watching it, I'm like, this is so 70s. Like, showing, you know, these lights flashing on the screen, and then she starts remembering everything that happened on the island. I thought that was really fun. I love 70s atmosphere, and I love 70s movies, so that was really all fun to watch. I'm a huge fan of the movie. I think it's a great proto-slasher. I mean, this movie could have easily come out in the 80s, you know, during the slasher boom, because, I mean, it's got, you know, everything I think you could expect from a slasher movie, really. So, I mean, you know, I love it for that. I love the archaeologist storyline, but for some reason, I love the teenager one. I think the teenager, you know, getting stalked was, I don't know, maybe a little bit more fun for me, but I still love the other one as well. I liked the fact that for some reason, and this may just be me, but the scene where Penny like attacks the sailor and stabs him, it always kind of reminds me of the scene in The Grim Reaper when the blind girl bursts up out of the barrel and starts slashing at a guy that come near her. It may just be that whole, you know, innocent girl like attacks an innocent person thinking it's the killer thing, but for some reason those two scenes always kind of remind me of each other, and I was reminded of it again. Yeah, I'm glad that I'm not the only one, but yeah, I've always kind of felt that those were similar. You know, it may, you know, be the only full-on similarity between the two movies. There was no fetus eating in this film. But yeah, badly.
Sadly, as I said.
Oh, I thought you said badly.
Well, it was badly as well, but sadly as well.
Yeah. But
Tony Hadley.
I'm a huge fan of it, though. I like it.
I love you madly.
It's a fun film. Quit interrupting me.
it wasn't me. It was Dr. Norman Corman.
That was fake, though. Justin's only experienced my genuine anger.
Yes. Have you finished Rhubarb Lady?
How dare you? If you were here right now, I would have no problem throwing a glass of cheap Chardonnay in your face.
I'd make sure I open my mouth.
I am. Because I love that movie, and I can't think of anything negative to say about it. It's just an all-around great film.
Cool. Okay.
Artwork, too. Joseph posted about watching it, and I love that artwork.
Yeah, it's great. I love that. I love to have that poster.
What is that weapon that he's holding?
It's like a sickle or some kind of scythe or sickle, like a...
It's a great weapon.
Yeah, they call it a sickle, but it's called something else, and I can't remember. But the artwork is just fabulous.
Mm.
Cool. Okay, have you finished? I don't want to interrupt you, Nathan, obviously.
No, that's good. But, yeah, I'm finished.
Okay, thank you. Eric, how about you?
Okay, I really like this film as well, and one of the things I like is it just gets straight into the action. It begins almost like it's a sequel, and we're sort of catching up on the aftermath of part one, and we're sort of about to watch part two. And that's what I like about it, is that it's very untraditional for a standalone horror film to begin in this manner, where you find sort of bodies of three dead teenagers. There's no slow build up in the film at all. And as you say, you get your two movies in one, kind of, with the teenagers and the flashback sequences intermingled with the very unproductive archaeological team who, as you say, sit around smoking pot and have sex and have the sort of soap opera backstory to them all that they keep complaining about. But they do very little archaeology as such. In fact, the only archaeology they do is when one of them actually falls into a hole in the ground, and they find sort of some underground caves. And say, hey, presto, they can finally do some work. The teenagers at the start, actually, as Nathan was saying, I think they're the preferable set of slasher characters for me, because they reminded me very much of the Dune Buggy Brigade from Bay of Blood, looking for all the world as if the 1970s had just sort of vomited all over them with their incredibly 70s hair and 70s outfits and their dialogue, where I think it's Robin Asquith, who's, I know he's dubbed with an American accent, he says something about the island being totally far out, man, and totally happening and groovy. So, you know, the hippie dialogue and the ridiculous 70s fashions have really dated the film quite badly. But when I say quite badly, but that's a compliment, because I like films that have that sort of dated look. And I like the fact that Nora, the character of Nora, who's, I presume, is supposed to be an archaeologist as well, and she dresses to go to Snape Island as if she's going to go down Carnaby Street for, you know, some kind of fashion shoot or something. She's in her orange, is it a jumpsuit? I can't, I'm quite sure.
It's a catsuit, yeah.
Yeah. Also, I mean, I know it's 1972 and we should be a bit more forgiving of special effects, but some of the special effects are quite shoddy, and I think we've touched on them. I mean, the opening shot of the lighthouse over the opening credits is quite fake looking. But that's fine. The bit that always makes me laugh, though, is where they're going to the island, and they're on a boat, but there's obviously a rear projected ocean behind them, and the movement of the boat just seems very unnatural, and it's quite funny. Again, I feel bad for giving out about special effects from 44 years ago, because, you know, it's very easy to mock them. But hey, I will anyway. And as Joseph was saying, the makeup on the sort of the second killer at the end reminded me. Remember we covered Humongous, and I uncovered a picture of the monster that was in Starburst. And it looked like somebody had taken a gummy bear and sort of squashed it a bit, and that's what the monster looked like. Yeah, but this one, you only get brief glimpses of it, but it looks like it's kind of a Picasso type thing, with his eyes sort of on top of his head, and then, or does he even have eyes? I'm not even sure. It was a bizarre image, and I'm certainly not going to say, oh, they should have hidden him in the shadows. It was just a shoddy effect. They shouldn't have been there. I'm all for that. I love that type of stuff. And as Joseph said, it was weird that the character of Penny, who seems central to the plot in the early stages, just disappears. And I can clarify, she does disappear from the plot after about 45 minutes. She's completely forgotten once we're told the backstory of what happened to the three other, I say kids, but I mean, they obviously are in their 20s.
Yeah, sorry, Eric, but you were touching on that. The one thing I was hoping for is, you know, she was in that kind of catatonic state. I was kind of hoping she would go back to kind of face her demons, because I love that when they go back to fight back and then she disappeared. So I was a little upset about that, but, you know, it was not a huge deal or anything.
Yeah. It seems unusual that the character seems so central and then it's just dropped completely. And she doesn't even get, there's no sort of resolution to her story as such. And as you were saying, for a 1972 British horror film, there's a surprising amount of nudity and gore in the film. And it's a stark contrast to sort of the more quaint horrors that Hammer were producing around the time. Like if there was one thing that would put me off watching an early 70s British horror movie, is that it wouldn't be sort of sleazy and silly and gory enough for me. But this sort of disproves that theory completely. I mean, I have it on in the background here and I'm just watching, I can't remember the character's name. Well, Nora is obviously getting bonked by the guy. And it's just tons of close-ups of bare bottoms, and it's all very, very. It seems almost like a Shannon Tweed movie. and also the other thing that reminds me of, and Justin, you're probably the only one who'll get this comparison, but the 1970s kids TV show, The Famous Five. were you a fan of The Famous Five back in the day?
Not especially, but I don't remember watching it. But I know of them, you know, sort of. Yeah.
Basically, it's based on the Enid Blyton novels, and it was kids. It was because it was filmed in the 70s. It was kids in flares with 70s haircuts going predominantly to places with lighthouses and stuff and solving mysteries. And that's kind of what Tower of Evil is, except that there's people take their clothes off and smoke drugs and have their arms chopped off and stuff. So it's like an X-rated Famous Five.
Yeah,
but no, I do, and I love Tower of Evil. Again, this is one that bypassed me completely until maybe 7 or 8 years ago when I saw it for the first time. But yeah, really love it.
Cool. Okay. Well, thank you. I mean, we talked about the Hell Knight comparison. Do you think it's likely that the makers of Hell Knight or the person who wrote Hell Knight would have seen this? Because when we come to backgrounds, we can sort of say, obviously, the film did get quite a lot of release in the United States and was. In release, well, just going, we've sort of mixed that in, but it got re-released as a sequel to The Fog, to John Carpenter's The Fog.
Yes, Beyond the Fog.
Mm. Mm. So I just wonder, actually, if somebody, obviously, Hell Knight came out in 1981, so it's probably not beyond the realm of possibility that somebody went to see Beyond the Fog and then sort of nicked the idea of two killers.
The relationship between the two killers and Hell Knight again? Was it father and son, or was it siblings?
Yeah, it's Garth and I can't remember the other one.
Was it Wayne? Was it Wayne?
Was it Andrew?
Yes, I think
it was Andrew.
Yeah. But it was father and son, wasn't it, in Hell Knight as well?
Garth was the last name, I think. I can't remember.
Yeah. Well, wasn't it Hell Knight? Yeah. He killed
Raymond,
his family, didn't
Raymond
he?
Garth?
Yes, Wayne and Garth, that's it.
I've said that joke already about 5 minutes ago.
No, you didn't.
I did. I said it twice.
If I didn't hear it, it's new to me.
Justin, you heard it. You tell them I said it.
I didn't hear a thing, Eric.
Oh.
You said you went... You sort of broke up, so...
Oh, you sound like Disco Duck.
Or the New York Ripper.
Oh, Eric.
But yeah, so it's not beyond the realms of possibility that the film, inspired Hell Knight.
Aside from the shoddy makeup effects on the killer in Tower of Evil, they actually, when they reveal the murderer in Hell Knight, they actually do look sort of similar in a way. Mm. So it's very possible, yeah.
But it has to make you wonder.
I was sad. I tried to show Hell Knight to Wes, but he didn't like it. So.
Really? Gosh.
He said it was boring.
Hell Knight's one of my...
Tell him that one dude gets in his skivvies through the whole film.
Yeah.
Like, are you talking about those big heart-shaped boxers with the hearts all over them?
Vincent Van Patten, yeah.
Yeah, Vincent Van Patten.
I really want Hell Knight on Blu-ray. It's a real shame that it's not out.
I was listening to a podcast, I think it was Killer POV, which is now called Shockwaves. And they had the Scream Factory guys on it, and they said there's some kind of legal issue with Hell Knight that's stopping anyone really from releasing it on Blu-ray at the moment.
Oh, that's a real shame. Mm. Why would they change the name of the podcast?
Because they're now part of Blumhouse, so they wanted to tie it in. I don't know why they do that, because it's the exact same presenters in the same format. So.
Okay. Well, no, just curious. I wonder what we could rename ours to, sort of, if
Eric.
We did. Eric. No,
we just call it Eric.
Inga, Rhubarb Lady, and the two sane ones.
I do like that Nathan is now the rhubarb lady. It makes me feel comfortable being called Inga.
It's funny how
means you need to play that makes whole you feel, lady clip there, Joe.
Makes you feel less bullied, doesn't it?
Less alone, yeah.
Less bullied.
It's funny how these nicknames stick, isn't it? So,
what's
anyway.
Funny is I've always defended Eric, and now I think because I've defended him so much, you guys are going to start bullying me. So how dare you?
Yeah. It's like
it's fun
grudge.
To shake things up after 124 episodes.
Exactly. You've got to throw a few twists and turns in there, a few things that people aren't expecting, like Tori and Susie references. So, anyway, back to Tower of Evil. Should we talk a bit about background?
Well, sure. Before we do, I'm curious to know, what, in your guys' opinion, what do you think became of Penny? Do you think she went completely insane and never recovered, or do you think she recovered?
I like to think she went around solving mysteries with her Uncle Gadget.
Well, if it had been,
I think there'd be a little bit of an age difference there.
If it had been the early 1980s, then it would have been Tower of Evil 2 when she went back with a crack team of teenagers to solve the mystery of all the dead archaeologists. Well, no mind you, they all got away, didn't they? But there probably was the mother, wasn't
not all
there,
of
left.
Them.
Well, not all of them, but quite a few of them. No, actually, who did survive?
Only about three of them survived, wasn't it?
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember how many did survive.
Adam and Ruth and one other person survives.
Well, Jill Hayworth, Rose, wasn't it?
Rose, sorry, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I think it would, I think she probably recovered. Because one of the people in it was going along to prove that she was, you know, it was a kind of not amateur detective, a private detective, wasn't he, for her family to prove that she wasn't the killer. So I think she, obviously with such amazing, psychiatry that they were practicing there with the flashing disco lights, then the chances are she would have recovered fully, I imagine. Disco therapy, exactly.
I think that's what helped her, disco therapy.
It was very very ahead of its time, wasn't it?
I bet the next step was a giant disco ball. That was probably
you should be dancing
two.
Tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she could have sang I Will Survive.
Exactly. Well, that could have been...
Gloria Gaynor, because she did.
Yeah. But, let's talk a bit about the background, and then we can come back in any other thoughts on the film. So, who would like to go first? Joseph, do you have any background for us?
Yeah, like I was saying earlier, it was apparently shot in Surrey in 1971 on a soundstage. I'm not sure, certain if that's true, but
Justin's
if that is...
Justin's from Surrey?
I'm from Surrey, so I would have been within, 50 miles of where they were shooting, in my crib. So there you go.
I was going to ask why you weren't in the movie, but... I guess if you were in your crib, you'd have been too young.
Well, yeah, there wasn't any baby parts, was there, really?
No. There's lots of adult parts.
Anyway.
I see them flapping around.
As I was saying, apparently shot on a soundstage. If so, they did a very good job of mimicking an island. Apparently had a $400,000 budget. Not certain if that's true or not, but that's what I've read. And the only other really thing I have that I was able to get, in such short notice was apparently during the finale, the stuntman playing the killer who gets set on fire nearly died after his flame retardant suit was set on fire. He nearly suffocated from the heat, and many members of the crew had to rush in to kind of, I guess, save him, as it were. But that's pretty much all the background I have on the film.
Okay.
Movies are dangerous.
They are. Yes. Well, thank you, Joseph. What about you, Nathan? Any background?
The only thing I have is that Jill Hayworth from this film made the made-for-TV slasher movie Home for the Holidays the exact same year. And you guys know I'm a huge fan of that movie. It's my favorite made-for-TV film. So it was really fun watching her in this one.
Have we covered that movie?
We did.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
We've done a
she
lot.
She was the victim of a pitchfork in that movie.
But one film, have we covered Blood and Black Lace?
Oh, shut up.
Oh, I didn't get that joke until Eric said shut up. Now I think it was a joke you were saying.
We must have covered it. I'm convinced we've covered it somehow.
In a parallel universe.
The podcast was never published or something. I don't know.
In this parallel universe, Eric and Justin were from Tennessee and... Nathan was from Ireland, and I was from whatever the devil country
Surrey.
Justin was in. Yeah, Surrey. Or Bristol or Brighton or...
Aren't you in Essex now?
Essex?
You're an Essex girl.
No, I'm in the West Country. I'm in the West Country, which is where Snape Island's based.
Is it a big country?
It's a very big country, yes.
dreams stay with you.
So,
sorry.
Well, thank you. But Eric, how about you? Have you got anything for us?
Yes, this was a collaboration between London-born but American-based producer Richard Gordon, who, as you said in the intro, his last production credit was the Norman J. Warren Sleazefest in Seminoid, which I happen to love. And Joe Solomon was the other producer. He seemed to specialise in motorbike movies. Werewolves on Wheels was one of his. Hell's Angels on Wheels. Evil Knievel on Wheels, probably, was the original title, but it was just called Evil Knievel. George Baxt was hired to write the screenplay in October of 1970. However, director Jim O'Connolly, who's not Irish, surprisingly, with a name like that, reworked the script much to Baxt's annoyance, and they had a major falling out as a result. I was getting various reports on what the budget was. $500,000, £200,000. I'm not sure. It was cheap anyway. Is the thing. Jim O'Connolly, as I said, is not Irish. He's actually from Birmingham, which is the hometown of Toya Wilcox.
She's from Alabama.
Toya Wilcox is not from Alabama. Oh, Birmingham.
That's where Birmingham is, in Alabama.
Birmingham, England.
She's she's one of those backwoods rednecks.
She's so not. She's got red hair. She's not a redneck, though.
Okay.
Jim O'Connolly had previously helmed the Joan Crawford shocker Berserk, which I've never seen, from 1967. It sounds something that Justin might have seen, though.
It is. I've reviewed it on the website. It's good. It's great. Oh, it's set at the circus. It's like a proto slasher with Joan Crawford as a ringleader.
Oh.
In the, you know, as in, they're called the ringleaders, are they? What they're called? Ringleaders in circuses?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. The film was shot for 30 days at Shepperton Studios in September of 1971. Bryant Halliday. Celebrate Halliday. No?
Oh, Eric.
Let's celebrate.
Yeah. He'd starred in some previous.
This is a very musical episode.
It is.
I like it.
He's not an actor I'd ever come across before. but he'd started some previous Richard Gordon produced movies like, and you mentioned Devil Doll and The Projected Man. And IMDb states he had only 6 acting credits to his name. So apparently he was brought on board to provide a sort of an A-list star to the movie, which so I'm doubting that particular bit of info I found. You can't be an A-lister with 6 credits to your name, surely.
Apparently he was popular in Europe. He was popular in Europe for some reason.
But with 6 films to his name.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he did something. Maybe he did TV.
Well, I suppose Enya's really popular and she only has about 3 albums. So he was like the Enya of acting.
Maybe.
Together we will break the chains of love. Sorry. That's erasure. That's erasure. Sorry.
Yeah, I know. I think that's not Enya.
I don't know. For some reason, it just popped in my head. You said Enya, and then I don't know why. I'm sorry, erasure.
Carry on, American Idol.
Carry on. Okay.
Well, Bryant Halliday. I assume he's American. I didn't look this up, but they were worried about him getting proper working permits. So they had an actor called Lee Patterson on standby to play that role, but he wasn't needed in the end. Robin Asquith. The famous Robin Asquith, he'd been in Pete Walker's sexploitation movie Cool It Carol, and he went on to become a very recognizable face of the 1970s as a star of the Confessions movies, which were kind of a slightly saucier spin on the Carry On movies. Now, I've never watched a Confessions movie, I have to say. Now, this may shock you, Justin, but I'm not a huge fan of Carry On movies. So, I never really had any desire to go and investigate the Confessions movies. Now, maybe you'll tell me they're brilliant and I might eventually go see them at some stage, but
he's fired.
That was Edna from HR. You're fired.
Was it? Sorry, Edna. He also went on to be in The Flesh and Blood Show and Queen Kong. Justin, the Confessions movies, I presume you've seen them, have you?
I haven't, but I just need to play this just for old time's sake.
Matron, no, please, hold your hand.
So, Eric, how can you not love that?
I do love that. No, I love Carry On in small doses like that, but watching a full film, I find it difficult. Sorry. Okay.
Carry On.
Apparently, Mia Farrow was a frequent visitor to the set because she was filming something called The Public Eye on a neighbouring stage in Shepperton. Robin Asquith says that Anna Polk, I don't know which, I presume she plays Nora, correct me if I'm wrong, but she turned up to do her nude scenes at one stage with her nipples covered with elastoplasts, much to the annoyance of the director, who insisted that they be removed. I don't see the point of putting elastoplasts over your nipples. If everything else is hanging out, you might as well just take the elastoplasts off. Mm. I'm just going to call them plasters. Richard Gordon had to do some severe schmoozing to avoid the BBFC from truncating the film quite severely because there was so much nudity and violence in it, which was unusual for the time. A trade screening took place on October the 12th, 1972. It was released in the UK on a double bill with Hammer Horror's Demons of the Mind. And Richard Gordon blames this for its lack of, well, for the fact that it didn't play as successfully in that first run, because Demons of the Mind wasn't a terribly good movie. And not a great thing to be double billed with. In June of 1974, it was reissued again, and this time on a double bill with The Devil Rides Out, another Hammer movie. And it subsequently went on as a support feature for Death Race 2000, the Corman movie. A trimmed MPAA version was released as Horror on Snape Island, and as we said earlier, it was released or reissued in the early 80s as Beyond the Fog, as kind of a pseudo-sequel to the John Carpenter movie. And it's not the most ridiculous. I still think Suspiria 2. Is that what Deep Red was released as in Japan?
Yes.
That still, to me, is probably one of the more most ridiculous sort of sequel titles for a film, or retitlings. I think Beyond the Fog, there is fog in the film, I'll give it that, and it's kind of has a seaside-y theme, much like the John Carpenter movie, even if nothing else is similar. And just a few of the... A few reviews of the time. BFI Monthly Film Bulletin called it predictable youth-oriented horror of the I Thought I Heard Something school, which is actually a compliment in my books. And another one said a most ingeniously constructed film which spreads its shocks, horrors, teases and red herrings not only evenly but generously over its entire length, which I think is fair as well. It's certainly a pacey film. Dennis Price, who plays Bakewell in the film, is apparently a tart.
Eric, you were mentioning reviews. I forgot. Apparently, famed. Well, I guess he's not as famous as Siskel and Ebert, but Leonard Baltin gave this a bomb rating. Aggregate site Rotten Tomatoes calls it a turkey.
That's harsh. Very harsh.
That is harsh. I don't think it's a turkey at all. I think it's very well made. It's a very good movie.
I think it's an ostrich.
Yes, that's more apt.
Oh, Eric.
But anyway,
it's a seagull. It's a seagull.
Yeah, it's a seagull. Yeah, that's very apt considering the amount of sex in the film. Dennis Price, anyway, as I say, and he plays Bakewell, and he was also in lots of Jess Franco movies like Vampirus, Lesbos, Venus and Furs, and The Erotic Rites of Frankenstein, all sort of around this time as well. And that is all the recently seen I have. Or no, that's not right.
Recently seen.
Oh my goodness.
Oops. Behind the scenes.
Edna's back.
Edna. Yes. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Eric, for that. You've obviously covered quite a lot, what I was going to say, but one thing, no, it's fine. It was kind of one thing on the Blu-ray I've got, there's some great extras, and one of them is actually an interview with Sarita Wilson, who plays one of the woman who gets her head chopped off in the one of the teenagers at the beginning, and she talks about the film, says it was a lot of fun to make, and she said there's a scene obviously when her head's on the floor, and there was a fake head that rolled down the floor. She thought the special effect of her body at the beginning on the staircase was quite well done.
Yeah,
but the head on the floor at the bottom was her head, and obviously it was done by her standing underneath floorboards and poking her head through a hole. But she said that as a joke, the cast and crew went off to lunch and left her there, with her head poking through the hole, and she was left while they all went off for lunch and laughing as she was screaming to be let out, which of course is quite funny. So yeah, it's definitely worth picking up. I say, if you, it's a really nice print, although it, obviously on Blu-ray it makes the makes that lighthouse at the beginning, the model, look even faker than it already does, but of course that's probably part of the charm. We talked about saying the obviously the film was shot at Shepperton Studios, which was the home of Amicus, and it was being while the Mia Farrow film was being shot, also Tales from the Crypt with that great Joan Collins Santa slasher episode was being shot there at the same time, and so apparently they kind of borrowed some of each other's sets throughout it as well. I'm not sure which ones they were. Some of the Jill Hayworth, she played Sally Bowles in the original Broadway version of Cabaret, but she went on to be in a number of horror films, including she was in Mutations with Tom Baker, who was one of Doctor Who's in about 1974, which is a film I saw years ago. I don't remember much about it, but she's also in Haunted House of Horror with Frankie Avalon. I think it was Frankie Avalon was in that, but it was the 1969 British proto-slasher where teenagers go to a house and get bumped off one by one by a killer who was originally meant to be played by David Bowie. That's one I'd quite like to cover at some point in the future. She wasn't, she kind of one of these actresses that became a bit of a scream queen but didn't really want to be a scream queen. She when she was interviewed about the film, in an interview she said, "I remember in Horror of Snape Island," which obviously was the American title, "my character stumbles upon five dead bodies and I had to stay with a straight face. Oh, the police aren't going to like this. And the crew just kept laughing every time I said it." I don't know, she may have mellowed now on the thing. She must be in her 70s now or late 60s. The film was released in Germany under the title Der Turm der Lebanon Lechen, which is very bad German pronunciation.
Lebanon Lechen.
Lebanon Lechen, yes. Translated into the English title is Tower of the Living Corpses. And although the film obviously doesn't feature any zombies in it at all, however, it was re-released to German theatres at the high point of the zombie craze in Germany during the early 1980s, which is really, it was retitled then Devil's Tower, the Schreckensturm the Zombies, which Terror Tower of the Zombies, and two scenes were redone.
Somebody get him some Rosetta Stone, please. Yeah.
I know.
It's perfect. It's perfect. And two scenes were later redubbed, so the catatonic girl from the beginning of the film speaks of zombies whenever the camera does not show her lips moving. And although we didn't see her lips moving in the film, well, not those lips anyway. But in which is surprising, the amount of nudity there was in there. But the film's Italian title was Perci il Dio Fenico Continua ad Isidera. Come on, I'm practically fluent, which translates as "Why does the Phoenician god continue to kill?" Which I think is a typically fantastic Italian title for the film. The film, as we talked about it being was kind of recycled on American screens, because obviously we talked about this before, but in the 70s and probably, well, from the beginning of cinema, before the days of video, and then of course films turning up on TV, and a film like Tower of Evil would have probably played on on small screen in America and the UK, but would have been cut quite a lot. So, but before that happened, it was kept on being re-released. It didn't do particularly well as Horror of Snape Island in the States, but it was re-released several times. But it was, as you said, it's re-released in the States as Beyond the Fog to try and trick unsuspecting audiences that this was a sequel to John Carpenter's The Fog, which is kind of one of the kind of standard tricks of the kind of exploitation market. But it was being paired with Sergio Martino's equally long in the tooth occult giallo, All the Colours of the Dark, which was also made in 1972, which was retitled in 1981 as They're Coming to Get You. So you can imagine what audiences can you imagine going to the cinema now to see a film that's just come out and realise it had been made 10 years ago? It's kind of a weird thing. But anyway, I think that's everything that we haven't already. Oh no, actually, the other things. Sorry, I meant to say was talked about some of the cast, and they're kind of most of the cast had got their acting chops or had appeared in horror movies in Britain, because the 1970s was obviously arguably the apex of horror filmmaking in the United Kingdom. And I've got the Fab Press book, 10 Years of Terror, which, or 10 Years of Horror, I can't remember, but is it 10 Years of Terror? Yeah, which is, if you're interested in the British horror movie in the 1970s, then that is the kind of the Bible, really. I think it's long out of print now, or they may have reprinted it, but it's definitely worth getting if you're interested in British horror movies in the 1970s. But we talked about Jill Hayworth, obviously, Home for the Holidays and Haunted House of Horror. But Jack Watson, who plays one of the sailors who isn't the one who gets killed at the beginning and does come back to the island, he went on to be, he was a very familiar character actor in British films. He went on to be the to be in Pete Walker's Schizo a few years later. Many of the cast and crew, I think, were tied up in Pete Walker's The Flesh and Blood Show. Including Candice Glendinning, who played Penny, who was a catatonic girl. Also, Robin Asquith was in The Flesh and Blood Show. He was also in another really fun proto slasher called Horror Hospital from a couple of years later, I think. So Robin Asquith has got at least three proto slashers under his belt before he went on to the Confessions film. So, but I think that's it, really. Yeah. Anything else we'd like to say before the film? Sorry.
I have a joke of the week.
Shall I play the jingle?
It's a Tower of Evil joke of the week. I just made it up.
Oh, that sounds ominous.
It's my joke of the week. It's so, so fantastic.
Okay. What did the doctors say to one another when they couldn't understand why Penny was catatonic?
We don't know.
It doesn't make any sense. Sense.
Oh, yeah. Because in American currency, that we call change cents. I think you call it quid over there.
No, in Ireland, it's cents as well.
Oh, come on.
Well, now you know Hawaii feels.
We should all take a moment to reflect and just pretend that never happened.
Listen, that was better than anything Eric ever did.
Well, it's arguable, but
but the echo's back because of how bad that joke was.
No, the echo's here to congratulate me on a joke well told.
Well, you see, we have this echo. We don't know what's causing it. It's the curse of Skype, I think. But luckily, dear listener, you probably can't hear it unless...
I think it's gone now.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it is.
But I have a Tower of Evil story.
Oh, okay.
I am part-time an author, and I wrote, I'm not like, you know, like a jack of all trades, you know. I'm a writer first, actor, singer, songwriter second. But for my writing, I wrote a story, and Tower of Evil was my inspiration because in it, the final girl, Funbags, was up at the top of the lighthouse, and the killer, and I wish Tower of Evil would have done this because this would have been awesome, but the killer down below was in the climactic battle, was using a chainsaw to cut the lighthouse down. And yeah, I was... thinking that'd be crazy if you were trapped in the top of a lighthouse and somebody was cutting it down with a chainsaw.
That kind of
very crazy.
That would be very
crazy. That would be quick.
Well, I mean, it would take a little time, but she can't go anywhere, so she's stuck waiting on him to cut it down.
It kind of sounds like the kind of logic you would get in something like Hard to Die, when Orville Ketchum goes off the top of the building and bounces and then gets up again.
You know, you Nathan, sound like Wes. You sound
he doesn't
just
know
like
the
Wes.
Meaning of the word logic.
Yeah, I'd love to. It'd be great. I mean, it'd be great. But she could be up there and like filing her nails and like, you know, washing her hair and stuff while she's waiting for him to get through that all that stone, which is built to.
She was really scared when she was up there, you know, and her friend who was up there with her got so scared she jumped off the lighthouse and fell on the rocks below.
Well, is this going to be appearing at director DVD stores anywhere soon?
Well, it was a story I wrote.
It hasn't been optioned yet.
I'd have to find the right actress to play that character.
Who would you get to play Funbags?
You can afford to be choosy, yeah.
Who would I Yeah, for what?
Fun bags. Who would you get for fun bags?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe one of the women. Well, I was going to say one of the women from Hard to Die, but that movie was filmed like a while back. It was filmed like in 1990, so I may have to go with a more current actress. Okay. I don't know who, though.
Well, I think we're all waiting in with bated breath for that, Nathan. But maybe get the Rhubarb Lady. Stella, yes, Stefania Stella. That would be good.
Where's she at?
I don't know.
She's hanging out with Toya somewhere.
Yeah, I imagine she's available.
Even though I wasn't in that podcast, it's still one of my favorite ones to listen to because I just love the idea of this Stefania Stella. And anytime she's not on screen, everybody's like, where's she at? You know, why isn't she on screen right now?
Were you not on the paper
crinkling sound?
Yeah, who's making all that crinkling noise?
There it was again. I don't have any paper.
Sorry?
I have no idea how it'd be me. I don't have any paper.
Well, it sounds like something rubbing up against the microphone. That might be Eric.
I don't have a microphone. I'm using my phone.
You're not that sexy.
Well, I have to apologise for any kind of inappropriate rubbing against the microphone that somebody's doing, but I'm sure we'll be able to finger the right person in a moment. But okay, well, is there anything left to say on Tower of Evil? Shall we go? Have we got any feedback even?
One thing I wanted to ask, do you think this movie had any inspiration on the more recent film, The Lighthouse, a.k.a. Dead of Night?
Yeah, I meant to mention that. I think it probably did. I'm pretty sure it must have done. That was from 1999, wasn't it? That was a great little movie, like a low-budget movie. If you've not seen it, you should...
It's a great, great film. We should cover that at some point.
Yeah, if you've not seen that, it'd make a great double bill with Tower of Evil, Lighthouse from 1999. It's definitely worth checking out, so...
It's good, but Tower of Evil is better.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen Lighthouse for a while, so I have to check it out again. Shall we play How to Get in Contact with the Show and see if there's any feedback? Let me play This Is How to Get in Contact with Us, and we'll be back after this short break.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Yes, please do get in touch with the show. As I say, we are recording this 2 weeks before we release it, so we might not have any feedback. Do we have any feedback? Actually, Joseph, do you want to mention what people have said about the film on Facebook?
Well, I really didn't hear what you said, but I'm assuming you said something about Facebook, so I'm just going to start reading those.
You are psychic, sir. Carry on.
Yes, you broke up. Anyway, Joshua Grattan says, I love Tower of Evil. This is one of those proto-slashers like Bay of Blood, Dear Dead Delilah, and Scum of the Earth that is so straightforward that I don't hesitate to group it with the Golden Age. Psychedelic, blood-soaked Scooby snacks. Andrew Burrell, I guess that's his name. He says, I got this when I heard Justin talk about it. It was a really entertaining proto-slasher. Hell Night was definitely inspired by it. Definitely one that should be more known. Maddie Thomas Taylor says, a real gem. I got into it after hearing Justin's little spiel as well. Super atmospheric, gory as hell, and wildly entertaining. I think if Hammer Studios ever made a true slasher film, it would be something like this. Alan Ladog, I don't know, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, says, I have memories of seeing this on TV as a kid and finding it terrifying. Naturally, when I saw it years later, it was nothing of the sort. It even has Robin Asquith from the Confessions films. Well worth a view for nostalgia reasons, though. Actually, it's from Gareth, I think. He signed it Gareth. I don't know. Anyway.
Do you know that Gareth used to be on Alt Horror? He was.
He was?
He was. He always had that. I never knew what it's from, but Anal Love Dog? There was that thing. Yeah, that's him, I think.
Wow. Did you just say Anal Love Dog?
Well, yeah.
Anal Love Dog.
But that's what his sign off there is Alan Ladog. See, that's where I've got that from.
Oh, okay. So, I see now.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was like an in joke. Whenever someone would be looking for a movie, they'd either say it was Anal Love Dog or The Necrophiles or Motel Hell. Anyway,
it was hilarious, Eric. Yes. I loved it. Anyway, sack around.
Yes.
The last one here, Rob Doyle says, having trouble locating this one, but I'll try before the show.
Okay. Well, you know where to look if you can't find it. It should be, I don't know if it's got a release.
Justin.
I was talking about Target or wherever one of your stores. What, your DVD stores, Blu-ray stores in the States? Or Amazon.com, obviously.
But you got to be careful going to Target lately. You'll get screamed at by creatures.
Yeah.
Creatures.
There's all these videos floating around of these preachers going into Target screaming up and down the aisles at people.
Isn't it private property? What's the kind of the law about trespass if you're asked to leave something? Because it's in the UK, if you're asked to leave, if you go onto someone's private property, it's not it's trespass, but it's a civil offence. But if you're asked to leave, it becomes a criminal one and you refuse. Is that the same in the States?
Yeah, but this is like a public store, so I wouldn't say it's trespassing, but they would be considered panhandling, maybe, and I think that's against the law.
Well, that's
I mean, they're creating a disturbance for sure.
Yeah, I mean, public nuisance, I guess is what they call it.
So, and I do think they leave when confronted, but they just scream all the way out the door. I mean,
not to keep,
they're very annoying.
Not to keep talking about this, but I just find it funny that Target came under fire about a year ago when they changed their toy aisle to like gender neutral toys, like, and rather than grouping like Barbies with the girls and the Transformers with the boys, they just lumped everything together, and these crazy evangelical people just went nuts over that. But you know, I told Nathan, you know, the whole bathroom thing will go away just like that did when they realize it's Black Friday and they can get a good deal on a TV set.
It's so ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, there's a group that I really like called the Lovely Eggs, and they call a song called "People Are Twats," which I think is quite apt in this because it's so ridiculous.
It's just the current thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's just the current thing everybody's mad about. I mean, something else will come up soon, and everybody will forget Target and be mad about something else. Mm. There's always something for people to be mad about.
Unfortunately, so there is. And sorry.
Especially you.
Well, or in Nathan's case, he's mad about rhubarb.
I can't picture Justin ever getting angry. You know, like, I can't picture him, like, say if, you know, him and Stuart got upset at each other. I can't picture Justin being upset, like, in a very serious, angry way.
I would never.
You know, I heard a commentary once, and I really think I picture Justin in this commentary because they talk about an actor who was British, and they said, he's the type of person where you could walk up to him and slap him in the face, and he would say, I'm terribly sorry, but I'm going to have to ask you not to do that again. Not only did it hurt, but it was very impolite.
Was it Hugh Grant?
No. I don't remember who it was, but I just pictured Justin like being like, you know, that. Like, that was very impolite. Don't do it again. I figured that's your anger, Justin.
Well, as they say, revenge is a dish best served cold. That's all I'll say.
Ah, yeah. You get even just later on.
Yeah.
Watch your back, Eric.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Eric, you live closer than we do, so.
Yeah. But you're all forgetting one major thing here. I have unagi.
Salmon skin roll.
Unagi.
Well, all I can do is quote one of my favourite lines from Jalo, which I think is from So Sweet, So Dead. It's a, I may be homosexual, but I'm not homicidal. So,
what a great line.
Yeah, it's a good line, isn't it? But, okay, well, so, do we have any other feedback?
It's not true in your case.
What, that I'm homosexual?
That you're not that homicidal.
That we don't have any feedback, that's not true.
That's not true, okay.
Actually, well, it is true.
We should mention this stage. This is a Mike Galashan pick. I don't think we ever mentioned it.
Oh, yeah, well, there's been so many.
Mike Galashan picked... picked Tower of Evil.
Yes, well, thank you, Mike, for that. There's many more to come. But it's quite a lot of... Well, as we have no feedback, and I say the only reason is it's not because we're not hugely popular, because obviously we are, but it's just because we're
you gonna, say so.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But it's because we're recording this way, way in advance. And we are probably going to have to... Well, we're going to see, because we've got the summer holidays coming up, and obviously being European, well, currently European, I don't know if we still will be in...
No, I did that a few months ago.
What?
European.
Oh, there's another joke of the week.
Very good.
But I can't remember what I was going to say now. God, he put me off my train of thought.
It's the holiday season, and because we're European, we get about 50 days annual leave a year.
That's right.
And so I'm going off to Portugal next week, and then when I come back, you're gone to somewhere else.
Oh, I'm going off to Barcelona and Sitges, so I'm going to be recreating Eyeball. So,
Justin, stay away from pig pens when you're in Barcelona.
I will try and do that, yes. And the Ramblers. Actually, we're staying just off the Ramblers. So, but I'm going to stay away from, is it Chrysanthemum, the flower of death? Was it the
Chrysanthemum?
But I can't remember. Is that the one that was flower of death, Nibel? Yeah, there was one, wasn't there? But anyway, but also I may not be European by because we've got the referendum coming up in a couple of weeks' time, which means we could go crashing out of the out of Europe. So who knows what a political roller coaster that's going to be? But and how exciting it is for you listeners to hear about all of this. But what we're getting to is we may have a bit of an interruption in the programming, but we're going to see. It may or may not happen. But we will be back in 2 weeks' time from when this goes out with another pick. And whose pick is it? Yes. I believe it's Eric's.
Well, it's a pick, a listener pick, and we just mentioned his name, Rob Doyle. I think he was in the feedback there for Tower of Evil. Hmm. And just as a bizarre coincidence, this wasn't planned or anything, but Rob has decided he wants to hear us talk about The Fog, John Carpenter's movie, which isn't a slasher movie in my opinion, but I'm happy to talk about it because I do like it quite a lot. And of course, you know, we've just been talking about Tower of Evil, which was released as kind of a pseudo sequel to it in the early 80s.
Exactly.
So The Fog, next week.
Yeah, next
2 weeks.
You'll be talking about your recently seen again in a minute, Eric, won't you?
I know. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm high on that glass of water.
And it's not even that early there.
No. I thought I could hear chinking glass.
It is now 12:30.
Yeah. Hmm? I thought I could hear chinking of glass
and
ice.
Water. It's only water.
Yeah. There is ice in there, isn't there? Gin and tea.
Yeah, sure. And I've only got a cigarette.
Yeah. Oh, really? Ice. Are you? But you're not. You're talking. You're smoking at work. Nathan.
No, I'm just kidding. I would never do that.
No.
That's strictly for home.
Okay. Okay, well, I think that's been quite a ramshackle episode, but hopefully you've enjoyed listening. And if you have, please do. The other thing is leave us some feedback, but also leave us a review on iTunes, because that's a good way of getting more people to listen to the show. And obviously, the more listeners we have, then it doesn't actually mean very much at all, really. But it's nice to know people listening. And we're
send me sweets.
Yes, well, you can always or send us money or send us, I don't know, send us DVDs, Blu-rays, whatever you want to do. But
yeah, merchandise, there you go.
Yeah, but no, we're just glad if you're listening and you're enjoying it. And we should have some more news on, because we've got two more commentaries we're doing, and I'm not sure if we're allowed to talk about them, so I won't talk about them just yet. I don't know if the details have been released, but we've got the commentary of Satan's Blade will be coming out from Arrow relatively soon, I believe. I don't know when that's coming out, but probably quite soon. And we're doing two more commentaries for films that we have both covered on the podcast, I believe.
Both early
80s slasher movies, which will be getting deluxe treatments. And we might be able to talk about them, I'm not sure, so I won't risk it. But we probably might be able to talk a little bit more about them next time. So, and they're going to be a lot of fun to do. So, we're going to play out with a real toe-tapper from Susie Sue and Hector Zazu called The Lighthouse, which Eric will love, I'm sure. Until next time.
Well, the good thing is you don't actually play them. You put them in post-production, so I don't have to listen to them now, thankfully.
But aren't you going to listen back to the episode?
Yeah, no. Eric. You never listen?
I never listen back, no.
Well, what I could do, actually, because I actually... if it's going to play. Can you hear this?
Oh, God, no. This is my favorite of hers.
Can you get it in your mouth?
Oh, my goodness.
What?
Barcelona, isn't that where Eyeball happened?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, you're in trouble. You got nice eyes, Justin. You're in big trouble.
I know.
Go to the loo because you were up drinking all night.
Alco.
He was taking pictures of all his vodka drinks or martinis and that stuff and posting them. It's just you and me now.
and my big organ. What?
We got Damon here. He said damn enchiladas.
Oh.
Hey, baby. Ooh, baby.
Now, what am I? I'm going to sing the Dublin song. Dubliners.
I heard Nathan throwing shade.
What shade did I throw? Because you posted pictures all throughout the evening of your vodka. Oh, toasted bread with a vodka martini.
Actually, you had lovely dips.
I recently seen his Blood and Black Blade.
Hey, oh, poor Eric.
Pictures of my mojitos.